writing in form is a wonderful way of discovering something that you don't know.
Welcome to the Poetry Magazine Podcast. I'm Holly Amos. This week, form. Thoughts on form from two of the most celebrated authors writing for young readers today, Nikki Grimes and Marilyn Nelson. Their work spans generations, geographies, and it reaches readers of all ages. The impact Nelson and Grimes have had on the field of writing for younger audiences is profound. And both are featured in this month's special issue of Poetry dedicated to poems for young people. Both Nelson and Grimes agree that for young writers, playing with poetic constraints can actually create an expansive world to write within. Today we hear about two of their favorite poetic forms, as well as excerpts from both of their memoirs in verse. Here's Marilyn Nelson and then Nikki Grimes.
A lot of young poets start a poem knowing what they want to say. And I say, you know, what you need to do is add some kind of form that allows you to be surprised, because you don't want to know where the poem is going.
Having those structures and those limitations also creates a wonderful creative freedom.
One of Grimes's favorite poetic forms is called the Golden Shovel. It was created by the poet Terrence Hayes in homage to Gwendolyn Brooks. In a Golden Shovel poem, the last words of each line are borrowed from an existing poem, and the borrowed language is usually a complete phrase or even a complete poem. In the case of the original Golden Shovel poem, Hayes ended each line with a word from Brooks's seminal, "We Real Cool."
We real cool, the pool players seven at the Golden Shovel. We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
This poem was first published in 1959. Almost 60 years later, the Golden Shovel anthology came out, featuring hundreds of poems honoring Brooks and experimenting with the forms Hayes had created. When Grimes was asked to contribute a poem to the anthology, it was actually the first time she'd tried writing in the Golden Shovel form.
Oh my gosh, I was obsessed. It felt very sculptural to me. The way with the sculptor has just, you know, a block of wood and he's, or clay, and he's whittling away and you're trying to find the piece that's inside of that. And so there's also this wonderful surprise, because I have no idea what this piece is going to look like.
One of Grimes's most recent works is solely written in the Golden Shovel form. It's a book called Legacy, which introduces young readers to the women poets of the Harlem Renaissance. Born in Harlem herself, she has always felt connected to that lineage of poets. But reading their work, she started to wonder,
where are the women? I mean, I come across Jessie Redmond Fawcett and Gwendolyn Bennett, and you know, there just were three or four. And I was like, I know they have to be more than that. Where are they? And so then I'd started just reading to find them. You know, I didn't find 10 or 20, I found more like 70.
One of the poems Grimes drew from was Esther Popel's 1934 poem, Flag Salute, about the lynching of George Armwood in Princess Anne, Maryland. The first line of Flag Salute also uses borrowed language, this time from the Pledge of Allegiance.
The line, in fact, that I borrowed was, I pledge allegiance to the flag. And she's talking about, you know, well, we have this great pledge, but, you know, how much are we living up to it? And so with that one line, I pledge allegiance to the flag, I wrote a mother's lament.
Here's the poem.
Ancestral blood waters cotton fields, and the earth I stand on, a history begun under lash, no pledge of liberty until war forced it. My people's allegiance to country was wrung from hearts of hope to one day be treated equal to the sons of the ones who shipped us naked to these shores under freedom's flag.
Here's one more in the Golden Shovel form. Then we'll move on to explore one of Marilyn Nelson's favorite forms.
I wanted to write something about the state of the earth and climate change and what's going on in that realm.
Grimes found a line in Angelina Weld Grimke's poem, At the Spring Dawn, which gave her a place to begin.
And the line was, "And the red sun shouldered his way up." I think it was red sun that sort of sparked something in me. And so I wrote a poem called Faithful. The punctured ozone layer bleeds radiation, and we offer complaint without apology for the years of desecration Earth has suffered. Red is no longer the color of jubilation, but warning. The sun will now allow wildfires to run rampant. Nature shouldered the brunt of man's mistreatment too long. Now it's his turn to pay. Even so, it is the way of creation to be faithful. Notice, each dawn, the sun comes up.
What I've been experimenting with in the last few years has been pushing rhyme beyond its limits.
Here's Marilyn Nelson.
So instead of having words that rhyme to the ear or to the eye, I've been rhyming words that are linked conceptually.
In Nelson's book, My Seneca Village, she delves into the history of a 19th century settlement of mostly African-American landowners on the island of Manhattan. It was decimated in part by the creation of Central Park. Not only did she pore over census records and written accounts to imagine the lives of the residents, a reverend, a music teacher, tubmen hauling sewage to the river, an abolitionist and activist, she also wrote poems from the perspective of these residents, using a complex approach to rhyming. We won't hear an entire poem today, but here's a sense of the form.
What I was working with is a poem in which there are two kinds of rhymes. There is the normal rhyme of words that sound alike, like down and town are normal rhymes. But then I also experimented with conceptual rhymes.
The conceptual rhymes change. In one example, Nelson combines sonic rhyming with opposites.
So in that same stanza, one of the words is day and the other one is night. So the rhymes are day, down, night, town.
It would be really difficult for a reader to decipher that quickly.
In the third stanza, the rhymes are poor and rich and house and washed. In the fourth stanza, nuns and tarts, and ear and career.
The mystery of the form, its insistence on adding layers of relation, I think that's one of its allures. Take this moment Nelson shares about teaching poetry at West Point, the United States Military Academy. The class was discussing a sonnet by Robert Frost.
And I pointed out the fact that it was rhyming in an unusual way in triplets. And one of the cadets said, "Oh!" and fell out of his chair. Just, yes, one of my absolute favorite experiences in a classroom. But that's what you want. You want somebody to see the form and just fall out of his chair, yes.
Be surprised, I love it.
Yes, yes. I'm not a confessional poet. I mostly write about history.
A few years ago, Marilyn took on a very old, but new to her, form, the memoir. And it was actually by accident in a way. She was writing about the 1950s and sent a few poems to a publisher whose opinion she values to ask what he thought.
And he said, nobody's going to be interested in your book about the 50s. If it were about you in the 50s, maybe they would be interested.
She took his advice. How I Discovered Poetry is a memoir in verse. It is a book about history, about the United States during the Cold War era, racial tensions, and the first stirrings of second wave feminism. But as Marilyn put it, it's also written in a personal voice that grows older as the book progresses, a voice coming to understand the world more clearly.
Every one of the poems in this book begins with a question. They're all about things that a child doesn't understand. I was born in 1946. My dad was in the Air Force for all of my childhood, so it's a book about moving around, always being new someplace.
This poem, called Bomb Drill, is about a short time when Nelson lived on an Air Force base in Texas. She was 6 years old.
Nothing belongs to us in our new house except Mama's piano and our clothes. I'm the new girl in Dick and Jane country, the other children faceless as grown-ups. I read through recess and take some books home. I read to Jennifer while Mama plays. I read while the television talker talks about career and the hydrogen bomb. Mama says she's going to vote for Ike. Daddy says, woman, you just think he's cute. We ducked and covered underneath our desks, hiding from dragon bombs in school today. Maybe dragons would turn into butter if they ran really fast around a tree.
Here's another poem, said a year later, in the voice of her 7-year-old self. It's called A Snake, and it's about driving from the family's new base in Colorado back to Ohio for a family funeral.
As soon as we got here, we turned around and drove back through the no guardrail mountains, connecting the dots of farm mailboxes to towns and faceless people who don't count. Mama hugged Aunt Karma and Uncle George. Daddy wiped his tears with his handkerchief. Onita wasn't in her pink bedroom. She wasn't in the hospital either. They said she was in that box. She was dead. We drove back through the frightening mountains. Jennifer and I chanted, "There's a snake!" to keep ourselves from looking at the huge and scare-defying emptiness. When you die, you go to a different school.
And finally, a poem written in the voice of Nelson's 13-year-old self. It talks about what it meant for her to discover, as Nelson puts it, that poetry was what she wanted to do with her life.
It's called 13-Year-Old American Negro Girl. My face, as foreign to me as a mask, allows people to believe they know me. 13-year-old American Negro girl, headlines would read if I was newsworthy. But that's just the top of the iceberg, me. I could spend hours searching the mirror for clues to my truer identity if someone didn't pound the bathroom door. You can't see what the mirror doesn't show. For instance, that after I close my book and turn off my lamp, I say to the dark, give me a message I can give the world. Afraid there's a poet behind my face, I beg until I've cried myself to sleep. That was my constant prayer, please give me something that I can pass on to the world. Please give me that, some truth. I don't know whether, it sounds like false humility to say this, but I don't know whether I've found it or been given it, but it certainly still is my hope.
Yes, the rest of us can answer for you. Yes, you have.
Yeah, and that's, maybe that's the gift we can give to everyone, is that doorway of metaphor, that ability to escape from the trauma of childhood, of adolescence, pick up a book and disappear into it. There is a great gift there.
Like Nelson, Grimes has also moved many times during her childhood, though for different reasons.
I was in and out of foster care for a number of years. And it was when I was in my last foster home that I first began to write, that I first discovered the power of words on paper. I was just desperate to get things off my chest that were burdening me.
At the age of 6 years old, in the mid-1950s, Grimes began to write. Her 2019 memoir in verse, Ordinary Hazards, chronicles her life up until the late 1960s.
The more you do memory work, the more you realize how tricky and how unreliable memory can be. And it's even trickier if your memory was impacted by trauma. And so some of the key poems in Ordinary Hazards tackle the very subject of memory.
Here is the last poem you'll hear today, about the first moment Grimes discovered writing. It's called Isolation Station.
The house was full, but with strangers. And I was there by myself in the dark, in a tiny pocket of a room with a tiny bed to sleep in and little space for the fears I packed in my suitcase. Which makes no sense, because why would I bring them with me? And the night sounds foreign to this city girl left me tossing and turning. There was no more room in my head to hold the anger rising like steam, searing the edges of my brain. There was not even a shelf where I could stack the questions, crying out for answers that wouldn't come. Why did Mom love liquor more than Carol, more than me? Why did Daddy let strangers take us away? Why did Grandma refuse to come to our rescue? Why didn't they love us? Why didn't anyone love us enough? Why? Stop. I leapt out of bed, switched on the light, grabbed a piece of paper and a pen, stabbed the page, and let my thoughts gush like a geyser, shooting high into the moonless sky, then falling down on the page I held captive till every line was stained with my feelings, and the heat of them finally had a chance to cool, and suddenly I could breathe. And there was once again room enough in my head and my heart to just be. Then I closed my eyes and it was morning. And then secrets. I slipped the tear-smudged page into my dresser drawer. Those words were strictly for God and me. Besides, this writing thing was some kind of magic trick I didn't yet understand. Except for this, magicians rarely share their secrets. My life in notebooks began with this. A poem here, an observation there, a rage of red ink, each sheet of white a paper haven. The blank page was the only place I could make sense of my life, or used to keep record of each space I called home. The daily march of words parading from my pen kept me moving forward. reading and writing became my survival tools. It was a coping strategy.
I understand.
And boy, am I glad I found it.
Everybody's glad you found it. All of your readers, too.
A big thanks to Nikki Grimes and Marilyn Nelson. Grimes is a New York Times bestselling author and winner of the Coretta Scott King Author Award. Her books include Ordinary Hazards, a memoir in verse, and Legacy, Women Poets of the Harlem Renaissance, which came out in January of this year. Marilyn Nelson's recent and forthcoming books are Augusta Savage, The Shape of a Sculptor's Life, Papa's Free Day Party, and Lubaya's Quiet Roar. You can read several poems by Grimes and Nelson in the March 2021 issue of Poetry, in print and online. We'd love to know what you think of the new season. You can get in touch a number of ways. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, which is also great because it helps other people find the show. You can also email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The Poetry Magazine podcast is produced by Rachel James. The music in this episode came from Reservoir, John McCowan, Rob Mazurek, and Irreversible Entanglements. All of these songs were released by the Chicago-born record label International Anthem. Also, if you're not yet a subscriber to the magazine, for a limited time, we are offering podcast listeners a special rate of $20. That's $20 for a full year of the freshest voices in contemporary poetry featured in 11 book-length issues. You also get free digital access on our mobile app, and you get all of that by visiting poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer where you can subscribe. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer. That is it for now. Until next time, be well, stay safe, and thank you for listening.